the opinions you love, the history you crave. This is Rant DM Radio.
What's up, everybody? This is the Ace of Belts, Dave Milliken, WWE Beltmaker. You're listening to the Turnbuckle Throwback Radio Podcast.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
The Shining Wizards Network proudly presents the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast with your hosts, the Impact Playa, Phil Rea, and Dave Mega Powers.
From the current to the way back, you are listening to the Turnbuckle Throwbacks. As always, your gracious host, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Rea, and I am joined by...
Black Powers.
Black Powers.
I'm back, and I'm Black Jack.
Back in black. We should have played Back in Black instead of Green Day's All By Myself.
Yeah, the fucking secret track. You have to fast-forward the cassette, which I had at the time, to hear this.
ShiningWizards.com is the place. Rant EM Radio is also the place. This is episode 54, opening up Black History Month. How you been, brother?
I'm doing pretty damn good, my man. How are you?
I'm pretty well. Very long day running around, you know, the life, the daddy do list, the honey do list, if you will. And things are moving and shaking, and we're getting ready for a very busy couple of weeks for the podcast.
Yeah, man, we're going to be loud, black, and proud. Yes. For the remainder of February.
Yes.
Can you dig it?
I can dig it.
Can you dig it?
All right, so here's the deal. Before we get into anything, I just want to make a few quick announcements. Of course, if you didn't listen to the show last week, you missed a really good show, as always.
It's the humdinger of a show.
You did. We had Emerson Murray from the Bruiser Brody book on. It was fantastic. We also made the announcement that we are going live on Rant.
We're live.
RantEMRadio.com on March 5th. It's going to be a humdinger. We're using humdinger a lot, huh?
It's going to be a wing ding of a thing, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun time. But nothing's changed. We're still with the Shining Wizards. We're still with... Geek Life, and all that other good stuff. Nothing's changing except Dave and I decided to do a live show.
Yeah, we haven't sold out, so...
No.
I know everybody's trying to accuse us of selling out.
Really?
You know, we're still the same. We're not like your Mike Norendongers or your Dan Lopez's or your Shining Wizards of the world who, you know, they're trying to keep up to us, but they just can't, man. They just can't.
I love your delusions of grandeur. That's why we fit so well. But anyway. I'm working on a project. Should be ready by Mania. It's going to be available to all our fans. I gave Dave a little bit of an insight yesterday.
I have to do something for it now.
Yeah, you got to do something for it. I'm not going to reveal it until... it's all said and done and ready to get put out. But it's a really cool treat. It's another labor of love from Dave and I to all you guys. Just something that I've thought about, and I got the idea from another podcast that did the same exact thing. Except I think mine's a bit cooler. And
it's going to be better than their rinky dink.
No. I'm not trying to be better. I'm just. I'll explain it when we do the announcement. I don't want to, because if I say something, I'm going to blow the spot, and I'm very bad at keeping surprises lately. So.
And it's not Lex Luger as the narcissist.
No. Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
We know what happened when Bobby the Brain Heenan had to reveal that surprise.
All right, so let's get into some news. Let's get into some news and notes. Let's open the show. Triple H made an announcement today. Actually, a text message went out if you're part of the WWE Universe. They actually...
Not.
You're not. No fooling. they made an announcement that they're going to be airing the Hall of Fame ceremony the night before Mania live on the network. So instead of watching a chopped up version of it on USA or waiting for the DVD like I always do, because I always buy the Blu-ray because you get the bonus footage, and now you can watch it live.
Wow.
It's pretty cool.
I'm looking forward to the Warrior induction, and I'm curious if he's going to mention anything about that poster.
Well, he's not. And speaking of the Hall of Fame, Lita was announced as the next inductee into the Hall of Fame. How do you feel about Lita?
I don't know. Like, I can – she is Hall of Fame material, don't get me wrong, but I don't know. It's kind of like when they put Edge into the Hall of Fame, like – for me, it just seems too soon, you know? You know, my idea of a legend is some, like, old guy who doesn't wrestle anymore.
You know, something was brought to my attention, and I was going to put it on the Facebook page, and I still might, because we still have a lot to go before Mania.
Yeah.
I want to ask you this.
That's the way.
I know you're not a big sports guy, but I know you know this much, that the sports, different sports when they do their Hall of Fame, they have a voting system.
Now, yeah.
In baseball, it's a bunch of baseball writers. In hockey, it's like alumni and former players and stuff. Football, it's a little bit of both. Basketball being the same thing. So my question to you, partner. Do you think pro wrestling or WWE in general should have like a voting? And I don't mean the fans. I mean, well, even the fan, now that we're part of the social media age, like you would put a bunch of people like maybe like, I don't know if you want to put an eligibility tab on people, but like, let's say the WWE puts out a list of 20 people a year or 10 or whatever the number is and let the fans vote. How do you feel about that?
I don't know because, well, first of all, you know, wrestling is a work. The Hall of Fame is a work. So me personally, I would probably just say no. Plus, I'm sure on their end, it's kind of tricky about who to get into the Hall of Fame and who, you know, not to get into the Hall of Fame because they work, you know, it's still a business. Like stuff with like Bruno Sammartino, they had to work out a deal with this dude.
All right.
To get him on board. So, you know, if the fans don't vote for Bruno Sammartino, you know, what are they going to do?
Here's my thing, though. Like, they're on the right track in terms of building a physical Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So let's say they get that. Let's say now there's a place in Orlando, Florida, where you can go and see all the statues and the posters, not the bootleg ones that you're pushing on eBay.
Whoa, wait a second there,
but
pal.
I'm talking about like,
my authentic quality wrestling posters.
I love how he says that. It's authentic quality.
And they go for a premium price that's totally worth it.
But listen, seriously though, dude, can you can't see that? You can't see them doing that? Like letting the fans vote? Like if they give
I could see them, you know, doing particular guys to vote in, but, you know, there's just got to be some dudes that, you know, like, you know, regardless of what the fans think, they want to just put that person in there.
Right.
You know, like there's like Johnny Rods, he's in the Hall of Fame, but he's not somebody that I would normally pick to be in there, but he's somebody that, that the WWF, you know, has been using this guy for so long to, enhance their talents, so to say.
But there's a bunch
so, you know, that's something that they want to give, you know, an honor that they want to give to this guy. And, you know, maybe the fans may not see it that way. Maybe they're like, we don't want this black guy in the Hall of Fame. Maybe the fans are racist. I don't know.
No. Stop that. I'm talking about like, but there's a lot of guys in the Hall of Fame that I couldn't see in there. Like Johnny Rods. Coco Beware, like those
all
guys.
The black guys, they shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame.
No, I'm talking about like they were job guys. Well, Coco was a mid-carder, and he had a lot of impact with the music stuff when they did Pop Driver and all that shit.
But with Coco, I don't really remember him winning any, you know, significant matches.
No, not really. He was a mid-card guy.
The only time I recall him winning matches is if he tagged up with Hulk Hogan or Hulk Hogan. Otherwise, he wasn't winning any matches.
Or that Hulk Hogan.
Or Owen Hart.
Speaking of Hulk Hogan, big show in Green Bay, Wisconsin, the day of the network launching.
Mm-hmm.
Raw is supposed to have the return of The Undertaker and of Hulk Hogan with Jimmy Hart. How do you feel about that?
I'm excited, actually. I've been curious about what they're, you know, when Taker's coming back. Don't you think the 24th is a bit late? Because then, what, they got like a, pretty much like about a month to hype up a Undertaker match.
It's funny because my son on the way to the barbershop today asked me the same thing. He goes, if they bring an Undertaker back, how long does he have until he wrestles? And I said, well, he's got about 6 weeks.
How old is he?
He's six.
So me and a six-year-old think the same way. When, you know, how long is it going to take to build this guy's
dude, look who he's hanging out with, man. He's hanging out with the greatness, the Turnbuckle Throwbacks.
Rubbing off on him.
Yeah, he's hanging out with the Wizards. He's hanging out with – he's rubbing elbows with the big wigs, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but he – my son made a good point today, and I said to him, I was like, well, they're going to have to do something to elevate whatever they have going on for Taker. And you know what? And that's a good segue because our friend Harry put up a question, and he was afraid to put it up apparently.
Because we were going to boot his ass.
Yeah, Harry said, speaking of Undertaker, would you be opposed to Cena breaking the streak, that being his heel turn? Would it not make him the biggest heel for a very, very long time, or would it just piss people off that much that they would stop watching? Now, before you answer, I'm gonna answer. No one's gonna stop watching. People can piss and moan all they want. They're not
just to watch
because they're wrestling fans. They're very facetious and they're very. Don't even get me started with the internet wrestling community. But no one's gonna stop watching. I would love to see John Cena go heel. I don't think he would end the streak though.
Mm.
You would make him a heel and build him up to lose the Taker, and that's pretty much it. Now, with CM Punk out of the picture, and we'll bring up CM Punk in a few minutes, that would be a fantastic match. I wouldn't mind throwing Cena to Taker if Cena went heel. That's a fantastic...
Has Cena even faced the Taker in the past?
I don't
recall.
I have to look that up. And if he did... It was when he was a heel, when he was Thuganomics, when he was rocking the Chain Gang. And
let me go on YouTube real quick, because it's just a burning question I need to know.
Omega Powers does that while we're broadcasting. Let me get back to Harry's question.
I'm not going to watch it. I'm just going to...
No. But no, it's a good question, and I'm not going to entertain it because I want to answer the question.
Yes, they did face each other on Raw.
Okay. And Cena was a heel, correct?
Well, they also faced each other at Vengeance 2003 in a fight for respect. I don't remember any of this.
Yeah, well, that was a dark time.
Yeah, I don't think I was even watching at that time, to be quite honest.
That was a dark time. That was when you and me were going to the Garden and half the place wasn't even in the arena.
That's true. When was WrestleMania 21?
21 was... Well, if this is 30.
When they went Hollywood. That was 9 years ago.
Yeah.
Because the house show that I went to was action-packed. They had Edge versus Shawn Michaels. They had Chris Benoit going against Jericho in a submission match. They had Flair in a cage with some other dudes. They had the debut match of the Masterpiece, and it wasn't packed. It was not sold out.
Right.
There was more than enough empty seats in that arena. This is the Garden in WWE, and they didn't sell out.
Yeah. You know, again, I would love to see it. I don't know if – I mean, and you could keep him heel. I mean, it's not – you know
– Would he even work as a heel? That's my question.
And we talked about that a bit last week where the upper echelon guys were – You know, they have some say in their creative with character. I don't know. I mean, if it's best for business, quote unquote, you know, then why not?
Well, really just depends on, you know, can Cena really pull it off? You know, the guy's been a face for so long. I don't know if, you know, I know the big argument with him turning heel was like all his like Make-A-Wish Foundation appearances and all that kind of shit. And, you know, I don't know where that's at this moment. So I don't know if it's a good idea for him to turn heel. I wouldn't mind it just for the sake of seeing how it would turn out. But if it were to happen at WrestleMania 30 with The Undertaker, just with what's been going on now, I just think the fans just wouldn't tolerate it, and they would be more pissed off than happy, and not in a, you know, Hulk Hogan going Hollywood on us kind of heel turn. Cause that was significant. John Cena turning heel. It wouldn't really be that significant to me. I would be I'd be interested to see what happens, but I wouldn't be as invested as I was when Hulk Hogan turned heel. That's just me.
Yeah, and you answered your question on the Facebook. You said, honestly, Cena would only lose if he beats the streak.
Yeah.
So.
And as the other person that commented on that, I don't remember the name offhand, but, you know, he doesn't really have anything to gain if he ends the streak.
Right.
You know?
No, he's already there. He's already a main name. He's the guy, you know, so.
And, you know, I feel The Undertaker, you know, definitely at this point in his career, if he's going to retire, you know, at one of these WrestleManias after losing the streak, you know, he's going to be putting somebody over that, you know, needs it. And just knowing that guy's mentality from what I've heard, you know, over the years from interviews and the dirt sheets, you know, I don't feel that he would honestly use his use the streak to put over somebody that's already over, and that's the face of the company.
All right, so let's get into this article you posted by Mark Madden. Mark Madden is
the biggest douches from WCW ever.
Yeah, Madden was a main player in WCW in the early to mid 90s. He was at the cusp of the internet wrestling community when it became big. He was the guy doing the chats in the back with WCW.
So it's his fault.
No, not really. It's technology and...
Technology's fault. It's robots' fault.
But, you know, no, Madden was an announcer. He did the whole thing. And you posted this article, and it made some noise, not only with us, in our, you know, with our fan base, but it made some noise...
With the boys.
Whatever. Yeah, exactly. You want to get into this?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting because, you know, we kind of touched upon this last week with the whole Bruiser Brody topic. You know, he was a man who, you know, stood his ground and, you know, he wanted to get paid what he wanted to get paid because he's putting his body on the line, you know, every damn day. And, you know, it's the same deal with CM Punk, but, you know, it doesn't really seem... You know, so it doesn't seem the same case for his peers. It just seems like they're a lot of these guys are just accepting what they're getting paid, which some of them are getting paid dick. If I remember correctly, what was it, like a few years back, it was revealed that like a guy like Zack Ryder was only making like 30 grand a year, which is not much for dudes that are constantly traveling. They're on television. They're putting their bodies on the line and shit like that. Chances are this guy is not getting any sort of health benefits, no insurance. Probably has to pay out of pocket if he wants to go to the dentist, all that kind of shit. And, you know, it just seems like a lot of dudes. And I think I even mentioned this in the thread, you know, guys like Hannibal, the dude who got Hep C from Abdullah the Butcher.
Allegedly. All right. That's another thing.
I like jumping the gun, Phil. You know that by now?
Yeah, no.
He got Hep C from Abdullah the Butcher.
He didn't get Hep C from Abdullah the Butcher. He's full of shit because he said like four different things, and this goes back to the Brody thing. Why is it in this day and age when everything you say and everything you do is documented electronically, why must you constantly change your story to get your name back on the internet when you know for a fact someone's going to call you out on it? Even down to our level, when a year ago when the Wizards were doing the thing, when Buff Bagwell was doing the interview circuit,
yeah,
he goes on the Wizards, And he says that, you know, the whole thing with Eric Bischoff, that Sting reached out to him and this, that, and the third. And then he comes on the show that I was doing on More Like Radio and says something else, and he was totally called out on it. And that's just another example of guys just trying to get their name back out there. I don't understand the logic in it. It's not 1982 anymore.
Yeah, kayfabe's dead.
it's not only is it dead, but like even like the magazines broke kayfabe. Like everything they wrote was like a work.
Yeah.
You know, like I thought that Ronnie and Jimmy Garvin were brothers, not dad and stepson. You know what I'm saying? Like, but that's the thing, and this is part of the reason why I like doing the throwback, because it takes me back to a time where it was not only still innocent, but kayfabe was still in full effect. And you read something like this, and, you know, a couple of things. He mentions that WWE, like, it triples the TV money when the TV deal comes up, and, like, the bonuses for pay-per-views get pulled off the table, and, you know, CM Punk has the last laugh. He made his money. He doesn't need WWE. That may be so, but, again, if this is not a work, you know, instead of playing the contract out, why walk away? I mean, you know, it doesn't make any sense. If you're burnt out, if you're hurt, listen, you wrestled Hurt a year ago, and you weren't complaining about it. Why? Because you were main eventing.
He's been burnt out for years. If you go back to a lot of the articles from even, was it around SummerSlam when he was against Cena, you know, the whole pipe bomb bullshit.
Yeah, I'm done with, and Madden makes some good points, and I really don't stick up for Madden very often. But, you know, it's come to that now. I think, you know, I feel like CM Punk may be starting a trend with upper echelon guys. Like, let's be honest. Let's say 6 months down the line, John Cena is not happy with his workload. You know,
I don't know about that with Cena. Cena just seems like a guy who's, you know, he knows where his bread is buttered. He knows his acting isn't
but
up to snuff with The Rock.
Then, you know what, we'll give him 12 months. Let's say it's a year, and now those bonuses are off the table, and guys like Del Rio and Punk and even maybe Paul Heyman, I don't even know how long Paul's signed for, but let's say a lot of the main guys are being casted off, or they're not being put in these main event statuses, and let's say John Cena's a little, you know, not happy with his character. A la Hulk Hogan in 1992 and 3.
Mm.
Like, Hogan didn't leave. Hogan played his contract out. So, and then he went to WCW and reinvented himself. You know, but he wasn't doing the whole circuit of seeing the sick kids when he turned heel. He was just trying to get, yeah, he was in the right place at the right time and became relevant again by turning heel. Not that Cena has to do that, nor does Punk. But
I just don't think Cena's the same as Hulk Hogan. I think it's, you know, kind of like what that article alludes to, you know, that the boys are marks. Well, they've always been marks, but I just feel I understand the sentiment behind that comment. It's just that, you know, guys are so caught up in living the dream that they don't realize, like, hey, you got to look out for yourself business wise. And, you know, I can totally see that. You know, some guys are just caught up in getting their character over or whatever, but, you know, pay-wise, you know, it may not be equaling up, and they may not be willing to stand up for themselves to get what they deserve because, you know, WWE's like pretty much the only show in town. So if they're gone, there's going to be somebody that's, you know, just as dumb that wants to take their spot and doesn't care what they're getting paid for, which is, you know, really not how you should be going into anything.
You know, he goes on to say that, Mark Madden, by the way, that the boys are marks. Too many have worked in an environment where viable employment options exist. TNA isn't, R&H isn't, and the indies aren't. They're grateful to be on TV, to be recognized in airports, to get what they get. If McMahon defecated in their hat, they'd put it back on and say thanks. A little harsh, but maybe there's some validity to that. I mean, I think you're right. These guys are marks, but they've always been marks. It's not like a thing where...
Yeah, but it's just different. And, you know,
how is it different? Because there's more exposure?
I don't know. Just the personalities are different. The mindsets are different. The way things are, you know, gone about is much different nowadays. And, you know, just from my experience being with Beyond and interacting with a lot of the dudes that were coming through there, you know, there were some guys that, you know, their mindset was just on, you know, being on TV and being, you know, famous, which is fine, but you still have a lot of work to do while you're, you know, you're on the indies. You know, you just can't, you know, I was just about to say people, you know, they can't just make the jump, but some people can just make the jump. But, you know, most of the dudes just aren't ready. And, but there's plenty of guys that are just, you know, doesn't matter what their skill level is. They just want to make the jump. They want to be there.
All right. Let me ask you like this.
Okay.
We're friends with a couple of indie wrestlers.
Uh-huh.
I mean, on Facebook and in person, like guys like Joey Janela and Kevin Matthews. I mean, guys who were decent workers in the ring. And I'm not just saying that because we know them. I'm saying
– I don't really know them that well.
Well, I mean, we know them well enough that we've seen them wrestle.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I've spoken to Kevin, Joey on with the Wizards and stuff like that. So we're not buddies. We don't hang out. None of that shit. But my question to you is, let's say – now, Kevin's already been through the business.
Yeah.
And Kevin got sort of a raw deal, and he made his name by calling them out. So now – I'm not saying Kevin's blacklisted, but, you know, Kevin's in a position where he's not going right now anywhere but the indie circuit. Joey Janela is a guy where you look at him, it's like here's a guy who plays two, maybe three characters if he wanted to. Has decent charisma. He's a funny dude. A bit obnoxious when he drinks, but I mean,
yeah.
but Joey's that guy who, you know, he's very athletic. And we know there's a whole bunch of guys in the indies like that. Does it change if they get that jump? Does it change their attitude because they've already been on social media and they've been dealing with the public and they've been filmed? And they've been recorded on podcasts as saying obnoxious shit? Or does whoever signs them that's in a position to sign them, whether it was TNA or WWE or whatever, even like Japan, does it hurt them in any way? And are they – I mean, they say they're not marks, but they are.
Yeah, they totally are marks, and that's another funny thing. Even my – experience with Beyond, a lot of dudes would, you know, throw that term around like, you know, so-and-so is a mark or something like that. It's like, dude, you're putting on like tie-dye, like neon pink and green tights on, and you're about to act like you're punching somebody in the ring and you're going to yell at people. Come on. Like, you are a fucking mark and you're not even getting paid for what you're doing. So
I hate the word. I hate it and I like it. I hate it because it gets put in that context. I
think I know where you're going with this. It's just kind of like overused. It's just kind of out of nowhere. How can I word it? It's still relevant, but it's not totally relevant. It's like, who the fuck cares? We're all fans. You know, a lot of us don't like the carny talk just because, you know, we know what it means now, and it's kind of degrading because, you know, you're not getting up on somebody for using the term.
But it's the same
fucking
thing.
Fans.
Like,
that's
I'm
it.
Like, I'm a sports fan. So if I talk the lingo that the announcers do, that makes me a baseball mark. That makes me a football or a hockey or a basketball mark. No, it makes me a knowledgeable fucking fan.
Yeah.
That's the thing, man. Don't tell me, oh, you're a mark. You sit behind your computer. You've never wrestled. Da, 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 da. No, I never wanted to be a wrestler. But I spent 37 years watching fucking wrestling. Am I an expert? No. Do I get some of my facts mixed up? Yeah, but at least I'm knowledgeable enough to talk about it. And I don't care if you call me a mark. I mean, like, I posted that Brian Pillman thing yesterday. And, yeah. Right. But that's a pipe bomb. And he called out the fan. You're a mark. You're a mark. You're a mark. No.
Chucky Styles, do you know what a smart mark is?
Yeah, it's a guy that thinks that OJ didn't do it or some shit he said.
It's a guy who spends his last $20 on crack cocaine.
Right. But here's a guy who totally reinvents himself. And because of that promo, and he couldn't even wrestle. Like, he was half a cripple, if you remember. He had a terrible ankle injury. So,
and I don't even remember any of his matches in WWE.
Right, but that promo and his run in ECW got him back into fucking prosperity.
Yeah.
So, you know what? Here's the deal. If you can use any kind of outlet to get yourself over, if you're the $30,000 Zack Ryder guy, who's using the internet to get over. He basically used the internet to get the United States Championship. And if anybody wants to debate me about it, you're wrong. You're dead wrong, okay? If you can use any outlet, like Kevin does with his podcast and his stuff with Bill DeMott on Twitter, or the stuff that he does in the ring, Joey the same thing, Pat Buck, all these guys, Colt Cabana, who now... You know, if he had any shot with WWE, he may not now because his boy just went AWOL on him. But if you can use any outlet to get in and over, do it. And you're not a mark. You just, you know, you're a fan of what you're doing. If you don't like what you're doing, then don't do it.
Stop doing it.
I'm just so sick of these fucking... You know, show hosts and these fans on the internet.
Hey, stop talking about the Shining Wizards like that.
No. my boys, they're my boys, and I've called all of them out. You know, I've called out the jury on some things. We've done it. We call out each other.
I've called out the jury.
You're just an obnoxious prick. I'm calling out people, but no, listen.
No, I'm right. I'm just telling it like I see it.
I'm just saying, like, you know, ease up. You know, you're in a different age now. We're on a ground level of something big with this whole internet radio and podcasting thing. And now everybody's got a podcast. Everybody's got a web show. And it's like they see the potential in getting over in other outlets. 30 years ago, you couldn't do that. Mm. 30 years ago, you had to go from town to town, you know, drive 1,200 miles a month to get over. Now you don't. Guys don't have to go to territories to get over anymore. Now you have developmental. There's different ways to get in, all right?
Yep.
So it's if Punk is burnt out and he's legit, whatever. But I just disagree with him leaving under contract. That's all. If it's not a work, I just think it's a douche thing to do. I mean, as a sports fan.
There'll be some other guy that's willing to suck Pat Patterson's dick to get in.
And back in the day, you might have to do that. Why don't you ask the Brooklyn Brawler that?
You know, get a scholarship to the Terry Garvin School of Self Defense.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah.
All right, let's get it.
Or help set up the ring for Mel Phillips.
Poor Mel.
Not poor Mel. Poor Mel's like a pedophile.
You know what I mean. All right, let's get into some call. I keep saying caller questions. We don't have any callers.
Not tonight. On March 5th, we will. Because we're going to be live.
Yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to be great. RantEMRadio.com is the place for March 5th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Dave and I will be going live. It's going to be fantastic. All
and
right.
we're going to start off with a – I want to do a retrospective on Well Done for March 5th.
Listen, you got Virgil tonight, and you almost didn't. we'll talk about that in a few minutes.
Everybody's gonna love this episode with Virgil.
I hope they like all our episodes, Dave. I was cruising through our episodes yesterday, and since you've come on, and I must say, we've done some really good episodes. So it's,
business has picked up.
No, business has definitely picked up, my friend.
Yeah.
All right, our buddy Baza Smith wants to know, with the career of Magnum TA being cut so short, there were many a match that never happened. I love this question. This question has been asked on so many shows, and now I get to answer it on my own. I don't think he's ever faced off against Randy Savage or Jake Roberts, which would you have worked? Which would have worked for me? What Magnum TA match would have got your juices flowing? I'll let you answer first, Dave.
Him winning the title against Flair, plain and simple.
I was gonna say the same friggin' thing. I don't know how old Baza is. He's a very knowledgeable guy. He posts some wonderful things on the page. But Baz, I don't know if you know, but Magnum TA was the next big thing. Before there was Brock Lesnar, he was the next big thing. He was the NWA's version of Hulk Hogan. That, bar none. The NWA was giving him everything. He had that 80s Tom Selleck look to him. He had the mullet, the girls, the cars, the motorcycles.
Well, supposedly his wife and his mistress came to the hospital at the same time when he had his accident.
Okay.
So the story goes. So he had his fair share of women.
Dude, he was – I would have loved him to work with Flair. He did some great things with Tully Blanchard, if you get a chance to see that. He had a great program with Nikita Koloff. Go back to all of that, Boz. Go back to all of that and check it out. Again, but Dave and I agree. Him and Flair would have had a – you think him and Sting had good matches in Steamboat? He would have had – they would have been just as good.
Yeah. Well, he had matches with Flair, but
– yeah, but not for
it was
the
just the – you know, they were grooming him to win the title, so yeah. That's the match. The match, if you're a Magnum TA fan, that's the match you were waiting for and yearning for and begging for.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. A buddy Harry, with a great crowd reaction last night with the Shield and Wyatt face-off, do you think WWE have pulled the trigger too early for a match by having it at the Elimination Chamber? Or should they be playing something bigger for the two groups at Mania? They may still be doing something at Mania. I think they're just trying to groom Roman Reigns, no?
Oh, I don't know what's going on, so I can't honestly answer that.
They're doing a Shield versus the Wyatts at next Sunday's pay-per-view for the Elimination Chamber, which is the send-off pay-per-view for Mania.
Yeah.
But as you know, they're grooming Roman Reigns to be the next guy. So I guess Harry wants to know, did he pull the trigger too early putting him in a match now, or should they wait until Mania? There's so much time left till Mania, though. Stuff can still happen.
Got like a month and a half.
Right. And this question is for you. I asked this question last week, and I don't think you answered it, but I understand it's hard to understand with my horribly drunk Cockney accent, Dave. I've seen on a few sites that maybe bring him Sting as a Raw GM. So that led me to think if they can do it with the same type with Sting as they did with Flair in 01, bring him in as a non-competitive character, then a few months down the line, get him in a feud with someone with the stipulation that if Sting accepts to have the match, he'll have to resign as GM. I like Sting in any non-wrestling position. I like him as a GM. I like him as a manager. I like him as a panelist on the network. You could put him in the next Legends house. I don't want to see him in the ring. I love Sting. I grew up loving Sting, but if you've seen Sting wrestle the last couple of years, it's not pretty.
I don't know. Maybe it's just because of where he was at and who he had to wrestle. I don't know.
No, he's wrestled top guys, dude. He's wrestled Kurt Angle and...
Yeah, I wasn't too happy with that Kurt Angle match, and that was a long time ago.
Nah.
It wasn't recent.
You got to look at his stuff from a few months ago. It's no bueno.
Well, anyway, I would still love to see Sting at least, you know, give it a shot, you know. As far as, you know, what Harry's asking, no, I would like to see something like that because, you know, I'm sure, there hasn't really been any news on what's been going on with Sting. You know, a lot of people just been saying that, you know, he's ready to sign, he will sign, but it hasn't happened yet, so only thing I could really... guesses if they do go with this, it would work perfectly fine because, you know, just as you said, you know, he's not totally ready to go as far as I know. I could be wrong. But, you know, with his personality, I think it would be great for him to come in as GM, because then the fans get to, you know, get acquainted with who he is. And I'm sure they could do some video packages to explain Sting, because I'm sure most WWE fans, they probably know who Sting is or have an idea of Sting, but they don't really have like the full grasp of Sting. And I guess, you know, also one of Sting's issues is that, you know, since he's never been to the WWE, you know, a lot of people don't recognize him for who he is and his accomplishments. And that's, you know, he's always been a thorn in his paw, you know, so to say. So, you know, I think breaking him in as a GM first would be fantastic. And if they do get a few matches out of him, awesome. Especially if they get him and RoboCop against CM Punk and Al Bundy, which is my WrestleMania 30 match, Fantasy Warfare. That's my choice.
I disagree. I don't want to see Sting in the ring at all. At all. Unless it's on your video game. That's about it. all right, here's a question, and I can answer this because, well, you we both answer. But even though he did great business with Hogan through his WWE run, do you think Paul Orndorff would have been better off as an upper mid-card feud for the IC title with contenders such as Randy Savage, Ricky Steamboat, or Santana?
Absolutely.
If I guess Eric is a listener, is a longtime fan, Eric knows that before I discovered Ric Flair, Paul Orndorff was my favorite wrestler of all time. It's one and two with him and Flair. You know, after he lost the cage match on Saturday night's main event, he could have been IC champion, but unfortunately, you had too many good players at that point. You had the Savages and the Steamboats, and I guess you could throw the Honky Tonk Man in there too. I don't think he's
greatest Intercontinental champion of all time.
Your opinion. And
I listen to what the man says, and I happen to agree. So
okay, we agree to disagree. Honky Tonk Man was not one of my favorites, nor was he, in my eyes, the greatest IC champ. That would belong to guys like Pedro Morales, Don Morocco, Randy Savage. There's three guys right there who are way better than Honky Tonk Man. You know what, though? I don't know if he was better off. He should have been world champion. But again, it wasn't good for business. And unfortunately, Mr. Wonderful did not get any titles in WWE. They should have put him in a tag team at that point. But again, you had too many tag teams, too. So, I mean, not too many, but you didn't have an – there wasn't anybody –
Hey, if Paul Roma was there, they could have had pretty wonderful years before they came together in WCW.
Oh, please. I mean, he was TV champ in WCW, which wasn't too bad. He had some good matches as TV champ. So.
And he had an IWGP title match against Muta at Slamboree.
Yeah. Again, Paul Orndorff is one of my favorites. I find nothing wrong with Paul Orndorff. He would have been better off if they weren't going to make him world champion. They could have put him in matches with Steve. He fought all those guys though. He fought Savage and Steamboat. He fought Santana on Saturday night's main event when Santana was the IC champ.
Hmm.
So there it is. Let's see. There's a couple of questions. There was one thing here.
This question's all over the place.
Oh, here's one for you. Baza put up the New Japan 2014 Cup tournament.
Yeah, I just saw that.
Do you think Devitt's going to win the whole thing, or did they give it to another guy, Jin? You got guys like Lance Archer in there and Davey Boy Smith.
It's kind of hard to call because, for me at least, it seems like Devitt's kind of fallen off a bit because he lost the IWGP Junior Championship, which, you know, could also mean that he could be gunning for the heavyweight, because he did have his match several months ago, losing to Okada. But I don't know. And also, he hasn't really been too active lately. He's been doing like a lot of tag matches. I don't know if it's due to an injury or what, but in my opinion, it seems like he's kind of fallen off a little bit, but well, let's look at the talent on here.
Takahashi versus Shelton Benjamin. That's a great match.
Yeah.
I don't know much about Yano, but I know Suzuki's a good worker.
Yeah, Suzuki used to be a pancrase guy, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he was a shoe fighter, right? Yeah.
Yeah. He actually beat Jushin Liger in like 10 seconds.
That was the guy he fought in that one match that Liger lost, right?
Yep, okay. That was him.
Okay, that's and I know who that is then. Shibata versus Carl Anderson. That should be a good match. Goto versus Doc Gallows.
Yeah, that Super Festus.
Super Festus. But Goto can go, man.
Yeah, but he's had many of title opportunities and never really rose to the occasion. So part of me doesn't feel he is going to rise to this occasion either.
You got Archer versus Devitt, Fail versus Maccabi, Naito versus Ishii, and Nakamura versus Davey Boy Smith Jr. Takahashi, I think, could win the whole thing. You got a lot of gaijin in this tournament, though.
Yeah, like, well, they've been, you know, a lot of organizations in Japan have been more gaijin friendly lately. And, you know, dudes like Devitt, you know, he was holding both the junior titles at the same time, the singles and the tag. So, you know, the doors are like blown wide open if you're a white person in wrestling in Japan. But I don't know. They've had like the same roster for so long. Like for me right now, like I still get absolutely excited seeing this kind of stuff. But it's kind of hard to say how they're going to mix it up this time around. You know, part of me really wants to go for Devitt, but I don't know. I think I might. I think I'll either go for Nakamura or Goto, but part of me's leaning more towards Nakamura.
So let me ask you, since I don't understand Japanese, when is this going down? Do you have a date on this thing, or I can't tell?
I haven't seen anything on the New Japan Facebook page, so I can't say for sure.
All right,
I can take a look and find out.
All right. Anything else pending before we get into our throwback this week?
No, I want to talk about Virgil.
All right. Well, let's play some music for Virgil.
Yeah.
As he comes down to the ring with his candy striped wrestling tights on.
Either that or coming down the hallways of Grand Central or the gravel road of the flea market.
Mike Jones, a.k.a. Virgil, a.k.a. Curly Bill, Lucius Brown.
Luscious Brown.
Was it Luscious? No, it's Lucius.
It's a Luscious. Wow. Look at that man. He's Luscious.
Well, it's Lucius, the way they pronounce it. Soul Train Jones, all 5'11", 250 pounds of awfulness.
Of Black Fury.
I wouldn't call him Black Fury. But
Black Fury Michael Jones.
Right. All right. So,
K.A. Virgil.
So now, of course, Dave and I are like, let's do a Black History Month. Let's talk about some great African-American superstars that, you know, past and present. So, of course, I'm name-dropping guys like Thunderbolt Patterson, Ron Simmons, Ernie Ladd, Junkyard Dog, Hacksaw Butch Reed, and Mike Jones comes up as Virgil. So now Mega Powers is insisting and sold me on a
Virgil episode.
A Virgil episode. So Lonely Virgil. And we'll tell you why we call him Lonely Virgil. Dave, this is all you, kid. So the floor is yours.
Before we get into Lonely Virgil, I primarily just want to focus on his WWF run, because for me, that was important. You know, there was a time that I loved Virgil. There was a time where he wasn't this weird guy at the comic book convention that had nobody coming up to his table. And when you got up to his table, he was trying to charge you $80 for an autograph and then an extra $20 for a photo. And then maybe throw in a NWO, you know, license plate frame for an extra $30. You know, there was a time where Virgil was just an innocent black bodyguard to the Million Dollar Man and fought for his freedom at SummerSlam and won the Million Dollar title. That's the man that I remember. That's the man that I love. Black, the greatest black athlete of our times, Virgil.
He was a AWA tag team champion in the south, southern region with Rocky Johnson. He was an AWA international champion. He broke the top 100 in PWI in 1992. He ranked him 74th.
Which is interesting because he was on a downslope at that time.
Well, yeah, and obviously, I mean, he broke it. He broke the top 500 again at 483, almost 10 years later. So, I tried, man. I looked at all the matches that we went through. I pulled up some stuff. You pulled up some stuff.
I watched the shoot interview. I watched all 1 hour and 30 minutes of him saying, "You got to bust your buns. It's a business." And he kept calling every guy on the shoot interview. Like, they kept asking him, like, you know, "What do you think about, you know, Hulk Hogan?" "Oh, Hulk Hogan, he's a great guy. He's a good guy. You know, what did you think about Bret Hart?" "Oh, very good guy. He's a good friend of mine." "You know, what do you think about Coco Beware?" "Great guy. He's a good guy." For an hour, 30 minutes. And they even asked him about the conventions and stuff like that. You know, nobody going up to him and stuff like that. They're like, "Oh, you know, for those that don't know, there's a few guys who don't know who Virgil is that are our fair listeners. And, you know, we have to tell them why Virgil is so lonely." I'm going to get into that right now.
Yeah, go ahead. It's all you. I tried, dude. I'm sorry, brother. I tried. I watched the shoot. I got about 28 minutes in. I was like, this is just miserable. Not because of him putting everybody over.
He doesn't remember anything.
Yeah, that he's a clueless putz, A. And B, he's not personable. Like, there's a reason why he didn't talk.
Well, there is. And he actually addresses it in a roundabout way towards the end. And the interviewer says, you know, is kayfabe still alive? And he says, "I came up in a business where you had to kayfabe everything." And he's doing it the entire shoot. And you know the whole reason why he's doing it is, you know, just in case, you know, he gets another call back from Vince or from somebody, anybody. You know, the dude is like totally set on not burning any bridges. Which is also why he just comes off so strange nowadays. And if you've had the fortunate pleasure of seeing him at Grand Central Station or at a comic book convention or a flea market or wherever, the dude just sets up his fucking stand with the big banner that says Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase and Virgil, wrestling superstar or WWE superstar. And of course, Million Dollar Man is not with him ever. There was even when the Wizards did WrestleCon for WrestleMania weekend, Virgil was there, and the dude came, like, you know, he wasn't invited to be there. He wasn't he didn't get a table in advance. He just showed up the day of, and I wasn't there when it happened, but the Wizards were telling me that the dude just showed up the day of. Said, "Hey, you know, I want a table." And they're like, "What the fuck? You know, you have to reserve a table, you know, X amount of months in advance." And, you know, I guess just for the sake of getting them out of, you know, their hair, they just set him up like in a corner far from everybody else. And if I remember correctly, he did have the Million Dollar Man and Virgil sign up. And Ted DiBiase was there. But he was like in a totally different, you know, part of the convention. Like, he was not sitting by Virgil. You could not get a photo with both of these guys at the same time. And that's what Virgil does all the time nowadays. And what was it on Opie and Anthony? They brought up an interesting thing. Like, you know, you got to pay money to be a part of these, you know, conventions. And this guy's just like all over the country. Even in like Canada, the dude will go to with his same autograph photos, the replica $1 million belt and all that. And a lot of people don't go up to his table. It's just, you know, we all loved Virgil back then, but now Virgil now is just kind of old and awkward and kind of creepy. And what's the best way to put it? You know, he just cons people into buying his shit, fucking hustles people, you know, $50 for an autograph, though he will accept a lower price if you do offer to, if you don't want to pay the $50 for his autograph. So he's just kind of like, you know, I don't even know what to say. You know, when I remember Virgil, you know, he was, you know, this just quiet bodyguard who got his ass whipped, you know, every week, and then, you know, rose against his oppressor and defeated him for his own, you know, $1 million title.
Here's a guy who, you know, in, I guess you could say he busted his hump. I mean,
he busted his buns.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm talking about like he started the way everybody else did back then. So he gets this shot and he gets to work with DiBiase, who's the complete package. DiBiase can work, second generation guy.
Been all over the world wrestling.
Been all over the world. Champion Mid-South and you know, I mean, he's been around.
Yeah.
But he's the all-around package. He didn't need a mouthpiece. They just gave him the bodyguard because he was rich.
He needed somebody to take the heat, you know, when, you know, they just didn't want anybody touching DiBiase at the time. Because when he came in hot. He went straight to the top. There wasn't, you know, really any waiting for Million Dollar Man for his shot at Hogan and all that.
And, you know, I didn't dislike him. I thought the stuff with him and Piper was cool when he got the, you know, the face turn and Piper was training him to go for the.
He's got
to
be a man. He's being his own man.
Like the progression of the character was spot on for the WWF at the time.
Oh yeah. And one of the great things about the Virgil face turn was he was with DiBiase for so many years. Like, you know, nowadays they put a couple guys together and they're already, you know, turning on each other within a few months. But DiBiase and Virgil were together for years. But they came in 87 and the split happened in 91. So how many years is that? That's like 4 years that they were together.
Yeah.
You know, they were almost kind of inseparable. So when the face turned happened, you know, well, how can I word it? You know, people wanted him to turn face, but it wasn't one of those things that needed to happen immediately. Not like with the Daniel Bryan stuff and all that, where, you know, fans are just, you know, going ape shit. But, you know, people wanted to see Virgil get his ass kicked. But then, you know, it just got to a point, you know, where it's kind of like, you know, this poor dude is just taking all this shit, having to clean DiBiase's toes and take his ass whippings. Like that Hercules match. Let's get into the Hercules match. I thought that was fucking, first of all, it was just a fucking squash match, but everything leading up to it was hilarious and just, you know, it was exactly what was going to happen with Virgil down the road. And it was on Saturday night's main event, Hercules fighting for his freedom because Heenan sold his contract to DiBiase. And DiBiase wanted to make him his slave.
Right.
And, of course, you know, Hercules doesn't want to be anybody's slave. And I think, what was it? There was like a promo with Mean Gene when it went down. And Mean Gene was like, hasn't slavery been abolished years ago? And, you know, it leads up to this freedom match with Hercules at Saturday night's main event going against Virgil. And, you know, Ventura's, you know, interviewing the Million Dollar Man. He's like, you know, have you considered getting your lawyers on this case so you can own Hercules? and the Million Dollar Man, and, you know, his classic style says, you know, this is America. You know, I bought him with my hard-earned money. This is a capitalist country, so I should be owning this man. And Ventura has the nerve to call Hercules anti-American for wanting his freedom, for going against the Million Dollar Man's purchase. So then, you know, Ventura says to him, you know, then how come you're not going in the ring to teach, you know, Hercules a lesson? And the Million Dollar Man is like, a guy like me touching a mere slave like him, you know, that's for people like Virgil to do. You know, have you seen Rockefeller pump his own oil? No. You know, has Donald Trump go out and watch the windows off his giant skyscrapers? No. So get Virgil to do it. And then Virgil got his fucking ass whipped and he lost the match and Hercules got his freedom.
Again, I understand his I understand the mystique because of where he was at the time, and he was a larger-than-life character, and he didn't even talk.
No.
You know, and I guess
he was almost he was voiceless.
Right, and I guess your reasoning for bringing this up and doing a whole show on Virgil is the comic side of the podcast, and I get it. I just didn't see anything good with him. Like, he wasn't terrible in the ring. It just, nothing stood out to me. Like, even when he was,
what was the first time did you ever get to see Virgil live?
All the time. But every time I saw him, he was with DiBiase, and he would, like you said, he would get his ass kicked by whoever DiBiase fought. Like, DiBiase would get disqualified or counted out, or he'd cheat the pin, and Virgil would get squashed, and that would be the end of it. I didn't see nothing, you know. So, you know, that's the only time I saw him live. Nothing. I apologize. When he was Vincent in the NWO, I went to a taping of Nitro in Philadelphia.
You went to a WCW taping?
I'm sorry, it wasn't a taping. It was a live Nitro. I apologize.
Oh.
I went to two Nitros, actually, in Philly. So, yeah, I went to Nitro.
I didn't even know WCW was even in the area.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I went to Philadelphia. Yeah.
Shit. So, wait, how did you see Virgil in what capacity?
He was Vincent.
NWO? Or?
Yeah, he was Vincent.
The head of security of the NWO.
Right, he was the spray can holder. I think they sprayed fucking Disco Inferno or somebody, I forget. But
beautiful. Now, what about the Hogan Bigelow versus Virgil DiBiase match?
I saw that at the Garden. What year was that?
That was 87. That had to be 87 because Hogan still had the WrestleMania 3 title.
Again, nothing stood out to me. Like I remember the match when you posted it. I was like, oh, I was there for that.
Let's go over the match.
Okay.
So you were there live, correct?
Correct.
So let's get into it. What are your memories of this match? Not just the Virgil, just the whole experience.
I was a big Bam Bam Bigelow fan. And this was 1988, actually.
So this was 88?
Yeah, this was 1988. I remember this.
Oh, wait, no, yeah, you're right, because this happened before. They were hyping up the main event match with Andre and Hogan for the title.
Right.
And that's where they debuted the Winged Eagle belt, which is in February. Was it February 5th?
Yep. Let's get to Howard Finkel. Hold on a second.
Okay.
Introducing team number one. Both men have a total combined weight of 510 pounds, and they make their winter residence in the Netherlands and Chile. Introducing first, Virgil and his partner, the Million Dollar Man.
Escorted by Andre the Giant.
And they will be accompanied by Andre the Giant!
Now the fans go crazy because they... Vince McMahon calling the match.
Virgil's put together.
Virgil's put together. He's just... Yeah, he was a good-looking dude. I love Bobby Heenan's wing jackets.
Bell to Delbert with Bobby. Bobby the Brain Heenan jumping into the ring and shaking hands with Virgil and Ted DiBiase.
Now, before I go on, I just want to make a quick Midnight Jury reference. On our current episode, the Midnight Jury talks about the super tape, the Coliseum video super tape. And they make a reference to Lord Alfred Hayes. And Adam Henning brings up the fact that Lord Alfred Hayes can – his description of moves is spot on. And his commentator –
getting the cats.
Right. But his – the way he describes the – you know, the kick to the midsection or the collar and elbow tie up, you know, he emphasizes it a lot. He puts a lot of adjectives in there, you know? All right, so let's hear the crowd reaction to the face team.
Exchange also with Andre the Giant, and he's going back to have another conversation with him. Find out what kind of conversation Mr. Heenan will have with Andre and company.
Virgil looking really good, though. For
looking over.
Man, that's
together. This should be an outstanding tag team matchup.
And their opponents will be led by Oliver Hutton.
Right, so not only was it a big match, but it was Hogan's four-year anniversary as the champ.
Yeah, it was Virgil's debut match, so a lot of history was going on.
All right, that belt is fantastic, by the way. That Dave Milliken fucking masterpiece. And for the record, Bam Bam Bigelow got no love in WWE.
Actually, during this match, he got his fucking head split. Well, not bleeding, but...
Not bleeding, but he got took a nice hard way.
Oh yeah, Andre was not playing it easy with him, but yeah. You know, supposedly Bam Bam was a dick during this time, so he just got his like ass handed to him. Even if he is hanging out with Hogan,
right? All right, so I mean, you want to get into the match? I mean, I'm watching the match now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's typical Hogan comes in and.
And Virgil gets some good chokes, gets some good kicks, and some you know, forearm sledges.
I love the fact that Dave is trying to defend Virgil to me.
You know, Virgil is a hero to many people. So, you know, this is you know, Hulkamania's fourth anniversary. This is Virgil's birth right here.
Who is he?
And that's Square Garden.
Who is he a hero to?
To the many, you know, listeners of the Shining Wizards Network. To the black youth. To the white youth.
To the black and white youth.
I don't know about the yellow youth or the red youth, but black and white unite to Virgil.
You're out of your mind. All right, go ahead. All right, so, I mean, it wasn't – Bigelow had some nice shots on DiBiase in this match, too. I thought, you know, he just
there's a part where he really laid in a headbutt to Virgil.
But that was his thing, though, man, you know.
But there's a part where they're just like, you know, sometimes when a dude does a headbutt – you know, like they're aiming for like the shoulder or something like that, but no, he just hits Virgil straight up in the head, and Bigelow gets up like nothing happens.
Clearly, the best two workers in his match are Bigelow and DiBiase. I mean, they could do it on
and Virgil.
No, stop it! Stop it! Go ahead, man. This is all you.
All right. But yeah, this, you know, this wasn't the greatest Virgil, you know, introduction. Actually, you know, watching these Virgil matches, something came, you know, very clear to me.
That we should have did Ernie Ladd, like I suggested.
Wait, say that again?
That we should have did Ernie Ladd?
No, absolutely. We're staying with Virgil. Virgil is Black History Month. He's as black as you can get. But I noticed with this dude, he's very like, he's just fucking light. He is a one light dude, and I know like Shining Wizards Eddie was like saying, you know, this guy isn't tall enough and stuff like that. And
5'11".
What?
Virgil was 5'11".
Yeah, well, there's like dudes that you know that tall that can work. Yeah, of course. Perfectly fine. But I know this is like I'll break kayfabe for a little bit. You know, his delivery was just like, it wasn't like stiff. It just didn't. There was like very little impact. Like he needed like a certain, you know, set of guys to work with, and guys like DiBiase, guys like Bret Hart. We'll get to that match soon. You know, were his style, but it was kind of obvious, you know, what his detriments were. Well, I'm sure you can name several detriments, but you know, I felt like in this match, like you know, for Virgil's delivery, because there was like a lot of hype with this. Well, I don't want to say a lot of hype, but there was enough hype. Like, who the fuck is this guy? You know, people want to see him work. He's always there, and then when he fucking gets in the ring, he just gets his ass handed to him. But he's, you know, he's a pretty built dude. It was, for me, it was just kind of, you know, it makes sense, you know, wrestling wise. You know, he's, what's the term? You know, he's just the fucking manager. He's just the piece for when DiBiase's in trouble. You know, Virgil's going to get his ass handed to him, and he got his fucking ass handed to him big time during this match.
He got his ass handed to him every match.
Not every match. We'll get into the. Actually, let's jump into the Rumble 91 match when Virgil turns face.
All right, let's do that.
Did you watch this match when it happened? Like, what were your reactions when Virgil turned face finally?
We called it. This was against the Rhodes family you're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah, we called that. I mean, I was a kid and I called that. So. I can get right into it. Uh-oh. Well, here we go. Watch this.
Price for 4-2. Get my million-dollar belt and get this ring and put it around my waist. Now!
Boy, did I waste it, didn't you? I'm a Scotsman. It hurts me when I go to pay.
Because money talks louder than anything.
Look at the eyes on Virgil.
Get the belt to Virgil now! Now!
Oh, Virgil. Don't do it, Birch! I understand you got to keep a job.
I'm not paying you. Take your time. Get the belt!
There comes a point. Obviously, Virgil don't have no point. I'll wash my hands of it, man.
One more lesson from the million-dollar man right here. Now get in here and wrap that thing around my waist. Wrap it around my waist.
It's going to be the story of your life, huh, Virgil?
Yes. What do you think you're doing? You get down there and you pick that belt up right now and you wrap it around my waist. Need I tell you, need I remind you one more time about your family, about your mother?
Give me a break. Another job. Remember, it just don't matter.
Now pick it up.
Remember, Virgil, there comes a point.
Wrap it around my waist.
What are you going to eat it for the rest of your life?
How is it going, baby?
That's right. That's right. Like I always say, everybody's got a price.
Oh, you got a price! Yeah!
Yeah! Yeah! Listen to this compassionate crowd.
Now, strike one. Strike one. I hated Roddy Piper as a face, by the way.
You didn't enjoy his commentary?
No. Not he was over the top rooting for the face guys all the time.
But that was like the best because he was just so just fucking rowdy. Like,
well, he
just
was funny, but
poked up.
Yeah. But you saw it, and it was good. I mean. I was happy
fantastic.
For him. Yeah, I was happy for him.
Well, for me as a kid, seeing this, this was a huge deal. Like, it was just something, you know, even though you said, like, you could see it a mile away happening. But you, for me as a kid at that time, like, it was awesome to finally see it go down.
Don't get it twisted that because I saw it coming, I wasn't entertained. I'm just saying, like, it was a thing where, like, he wasn't one of my favorites. So it wasn't like if it was Dusty Rhodes or if it was...
Who, like, completely jobbed himself out during this match or right. This whole feud.
Yeah. Dusty, again, Dusty was in the twilight and making his money and polka dots and blah, 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 but...
He wasn't wearing the polka dots at this point. He was wearing that the friggin' hobo stove top hat.
Yeah, the pizza man.
Yeah, the pizza man.
The son of a plumber. I ain't doing no more Dusty Rhodes. You motherfuckers buy T-shirts. Mm. So anyway.
But anyway, the match is just kind of it's more or less DiBiase just humiliating Virgil the entire time. You know, saying. Which I got some of the, you know, I'll show you how it's done, or stop embarrassing me in front of all these people, right. And just slapping the shit out of this guy, you know, around ringside. And, you know, just seeing something like that, you know, especially being a kid, you know, you just get so wrapped up in, you know, even though this dude had his past, you know, you wanted to see this guy get his revenge. Cause this was like one of the few times, in my opinion, you know, one of the mid-card guys got a legit, like, good face turn. You know, you had guys like, you know, Boss Man, who, you know, his face turn was, it was all a misunderstanding. What was it? They handcuffed Jake Roberts, beating the shit out of him. And then Slick, you know, lets it slip out during, the promo that, you know, he paid the $1 million man, or the $1 million man paid him to, you know, get all this stuff done. And then Boss Man's like, what? We weren't preserving the law? And, you know, he flips out. And it's just kind of like, I don't know. For me, that was, you know, seeing it, you know, these days, it's just kind of cheesy. But, you know, how this played out was done so well. And for a dude like Virgil who can't, you know, he doesn't really have any mic skills, but he can emote. And the guy's got some priceless, you know, facial expressions during all of this. And, you know, as you heard, you know, they just like played it, you know, to a T, bringing up his mother, you know, put that belt around me, you know, all that kind of shit, calling him an idiot. You know, you paid the price before, you know, all that kind of stuff. It just like, it came together perfectly. And for a guy like Virgil, you know, again, not the greatest worker, not the greatest guy, but it just, you know, just under these circumstances, it worked beautifully. And I'll say this. I was a bit disappointed in the WrestleMania 7 match. Especially what? It went to like a count out or something like that?
Which one was that?
WrestleMania 7.
With Haku?
No. That happened on Superstars. I'm talking about the WrestleMania 7 match that they had against each other.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. I thought you meant Virgil.
Yeah. Virgil and Million Dollar Man had the match at WrestleMania 7.
WrestleMania 7, right.
Yeah.
Okay. Where is that?
Let me see. On my end. It was like either a count out. It had to be a DQ.
Did he win the belt at this point? Or?
No, he won the belt at the next event, which was SummerSlam 91.
Right.
Yeah. But, you know, at WrestleMania, you're kind of hoping that... you know, the feud would have, you know, culminated there, but the belt wasn't on the line. It was just them going against each other and had some bogus fucking, you know, DQ finish. But again, you know, Piper was, you know, backing up Virgil at this point.
Yeah, that was the highlight for me, because even though I didn't like Piper on the microphone as a face, I loved him in any capacity outside of that. So him being in Virgil's ear was comforting, because, again, Piper could talk.
Piper can talk. Piper and not only work. That, but, you know, he's getting behind a guy like Virgil, who's at this point like the ultimate underdog. We've seen his shitty matches with him just getting destroyed by Hercules and Bigelow and Hogan and all them. And, you know, but one of the things was, you know, this guy's, you know, trying to fight back and just getting his ass whipped. And Piper's in his ear to get the fuck up. Get up. Over and over and over again. And what was that, WrestleMania 7? That's like that was around the time that was it Piper got into the motorcycle accident, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So the dude could I was kind of surprised by this. I don't know how kayfabe it was or, you know, how real it was or whatever, but, you know, they're playing up the injury. The guy's on his you know, fucking crutches, and DiBiase, you know, pulls the crutches out from underneath him, starts beating the shit out of him and, you know, destroying his leg. And, you know, this time around now, Virgil's telling him to get up. And that was like a, you know, even though the match, you know, didn't end, you know, the way that I think a lot of people wanted to, it still had that dramatic effect, and it kept going, which for me was incredible and kept me, you know, wanting to root for Virgil, because that was his point where he wasn't just, you know, he was breaking out of, you know, just being the Million Dollar Man's bodyguard and, you know, trying to get out of his shadow and, you know, being a shitty wrestler in general. And which brings us to the Haku match. I'm pretty sure this happened before WrestleMania 7. And I actually think I saw this when I was a kid, because I remember 91 is when I really started being more conscious and watching as many shows as I could, because I didn't have cable. I could only watch Superstars and Challenge, you know, on Saturdays and Sundays. We just had like regular TV. And I remember this. I definitely remember this match. And, you know, Haku, you know, knowing what we know now, this dude is just fucking the toughest dude in the, on the planet as far as wrestling is concerned. And, you know, this actually was like a pretty decent match, but, you know, knowing what I know now, it's just kind of, it's just kind of strange seeing, you know, Virgil kind of manhandle, you know, Haku. He's fucking throwing him in the turnbuckle and this like burst of sweat.
Let's take you to Superstars, February 23rd, 1991. Virgil gets the schoolboy on Haku.
Bobby Roddy Piper with Roddy. Look at this. DiBiase, the siege by Apoplex. Look at this. Virgil, his hand raised in a token of victory. Virgil! It's official, folks. It's official.
Listen to that pop.
Yeah. It only matters, Ted DiBiase, that it was accomplished. Yeah, come on down! Come on down! Need a little help, maybe? Open the ropes wide. Come on in, the water's fine. Why wait for WrestleMania? Go ahead!
I know this is about Virgil, Dave, but how awesome are Roddy Piper and Ted DiBiase?
Did they ever go against each other? I don't really remember them having too many altercations.
And the 90s weren't a good time for fashion, as Piper's wearing the stonewashed cut-up denim jacket.
It looks good on him.
Yeah, with the
I don't know about anybody else.
With the yellow ribbon around his arm, because we're at war. At that point, it was Desert Storm going on.
The evil Iraqi sympathizer, Sergeant Slaughter.
Right. Yeah, but Virgil gets a nice pop. He loses the candy stripe tights. Now he's got the regular white tights, and Piper's in his ear, and the crowd is – he's over like gangbusters at this point.
People fucking love Virgil, and, you know, we covered SummerSlam 91 over the summer.
We did.
That was my first show, you. And we heard the pop that Virgil got on his own.
Right.
That match.
Right.
And that was a fucking awesome match. You know, regardless of, you know, how we deem Virgil, you know, he's one of those kind of dudes who, you know, he's got some good basics to him. But, you know, he can't really go in like a big capacity. But when he was with DiBiase, those matches were phenomenal. You couldn't even tell the difference, you know, compared to the Hercules match and all that other kind of shit. You know, Virgil was able to pull it together, you know, at least for this point in time.
Right.
And that SummerSlam 91 match is fantastic when they fucking, what was it? Was it Sherry hit him with some sort of foreign object? DiBiase gets the pin. Referee turns it around after realizing, you know, there was interference. Restarts the match. Everybody goes ape shit. They're going bananas, blowing the roof off of Madison Square Garden. Match starts over again. You know, DiBiase's turnbuckle antics, you know, taking the cover off the turnbuckle backfires on him. Gets his head rammed into the post. Virgil pulls like the very slow, you know, putting the arm on top of him. Gets the three. Madison Square Garden is officially Virgil's home.
And then fast forward to the Survivor Series, where Virgil defended the $1 million belt, right, against DiBiase.
Survivor Series Showdown.
It was the show. It was even. He was on the pre-show. This was on the USA Channel.
That Survivor Series was garbage to begin with. It was like a. It was just one big commercial for this Tuesday in Texas.
All right. So now, Virgil gets the red and white tights. Now DiBiase is relentless.
Because they had several rematches at this point. There was one. I know one of the dudes posted this up with Savage as the special guest referee.
Yes, I remember that match. This is this is from Primetime Wrestling.
And, yeah, and but they were actually. I remember them touring with that match.
Yeah.
On the East Coast. Unfortunately, I didn't get to see it. I only got to see one event. You know, during my time as a kid. But I remember seeing that on TV and wanting to go to the event. But luckily, it was on I don't know if it was on primetime. I remember seeing it on a Coliseum home video.
If I had the money, I would pay such good money for one of those WWF turnbuckles. Just to have that in my man cave. DiBiase is so good. And I keep saying this. I'm sorry. But I was talking about this with the little guy today. I said, you have to go back to watch these guys like DiBiase, the complete package guys, guys that didn't need much. DiBiase made Virgil, same way Piper made Virgil look good. Piper made guys look good, too. Piper made Mr. T look good. Piper made Hogan look like a friggin', like Luthez. Yeah, like Luthez, you know. We're about 11 minutes in. Virgil gets the he gets to come back. He's got the biker shorts with his name on them now.
Looks like boxer slips.
Like boxing pants. Nice Russian leg sweep.
Come on, Teddy. Get out. Get out. Regroup. Cut the show. Virgil with DiBiase. Whips it to the Virgil.
Bothers me about guys like Barry Darso. Like, he refuses. I went to an autograph signing a few years ago. I took the little guy to meet Demolition. And they were so nice. They signed Mikey's figures. They signed his 8x10. Mikey loves Demolition, by the way.
Mm.
And
who doesn't?
No, exactly. But they told me, while I was waiting online, not to mention to Barry Darso, who's Smash. But now he's the Repo Man in this match. Don't mention the Repo Man gimmick to him.
Why not?
I don't know, but like even Cabana tried making a pass at it on her podcast, and he was like, didn't want to talk about it.
What about Hole in One, Barry Darso?
He didn't want that, and the Blacktop Bully and all the nonsense. But
he wouldn't talk about that?
No, and I don't understand why. It was pertinent. I mean, like, look at this.
He agreed to do it. So,
and Sherry was so good with DiBiase. Sherry was good with everybody. Plus, she was a hot piece.
Yeah.
She could get it, man. She could have got it. Like,
there's a lot of dudes I remember when I was a kid, they didn't like Sherry, but then later on they admitted to having like a little crush on her.
Dude, everybody she had was a champion or a king or something. There's El Matador coming out now.
Chico.
Yeah, your boy Chico.
That's Lopez's Chico.
That's Lopez's Chico. Good Russian leg sweep, though, on DiBiase by Virgil. That was good. I like that. I enjoyed that. Again, Virgil wasn't terrible, just wasn't one of my favorites.
He's one of those kind of dudes who, you know, he had good basics, as I mentioned. You know, his footwork was okay. But when I watch these Virgil matches, especially the Bret Hart one, which we're going to get into, like, you can really tell just by watching these, you know, kind of matches that, you know, especially if you want to be a pro wrestler. I don't know if anybody fucking listens to the show wants to be a pro wrestler, but if they do, you know, watch some of these Virgil matches, because you can really tell, you know, both guys got to put something into what they're doing. It's not just about one guy doing all the work. You know, both guys have to put, you know, effort into what they're doing, because there's a lot of stuff that, you know, Virgil's doing, but the other guy isn't, you know, completely going along with what he's trying to accomplish. And I can understand why guys like DiBiase, you know, can have a match with Virgil and it looks flawless. It's entertaining. It's the whole package. Why a guy like Bret Hart can, you know, pull a decent match out of Virgil. You know, it's a community kind of thing. You know, I don't think I'm really saying anything new, but when you watch these matches, you know, you can tell, you know, who's doing what they're supposed to be doing in the match.
And I mentioned this a million times, and you know, I mentioned about my pet peeve about storytelling.
Yeah.
And how guys go in and they do 4,000 spots and they put themselves over and they're in great shape, have a good look. Some of them can even talk. But can you tell a story? And another reason why I love doing this podcast is because we could talk about stuff like this. These guys told a story.
Virgil told the story.
Right. Virgil told a story about a guy who was treated like crap. came into Prosperity, and it happened in real life all the time. Guys, you know, you go to a job, you get treated like shit, and you're like, you know what, take this job and shove it, man. I'll get another job. I'll take
that, yeah.
You know, and that was the mentality in the 80s and the 90s. You had a sense of that, and there's so many things that today's wrestling misses with that. Like a good example, I was watching Raw the other night. Not to get off Virgil, but they had a cage match between the tag champions, the New Age Outlaws, and they fought the Usos. Now, they didn't – I'm sorry, not the Usos. They fought Cody and Goldust, and the Usos interfered. So now they're priming the Usos for a title run, which I have no problem with. But the cage match meant something back then. The cage match meant that this was the end of the feud – that, you know, we've had a lot of matches, and now we're going to see who's the better person, the better team in this case, with no interference and no nonsense. But these guys didn't really build a history. They lost the belts, had like one or two matches after that, and then they throw them in a cage. Like, it didn't tell a good story to me.
Was the match any good?
The match was decent.
Is there a moonsault off the top of the cage?
Yes, there is.
Oh, wow.
Which is Cody's, you know, it's Cody's signature spot now. I don't have a problem with that. But, you know, sports entertainment has lost that flair, Dave. It lost that storytelling edge.
It lost it a long time ago, Phil.
Well, that's the thing, dude. You have all this television now. I mean, we were kids. We only had a couple hours a week.
Yeah.
Now you have 10 hours of programming. You can't tell a story in 10 hours?
It's ridiculous, and especially at this point. Like, you know, we know kayfabe is dead and that part of the magic is gone, but dudes can still have good-ass matches, and they're just not, you know, doing it, which is baffling to me because, you know, I remember, what was it, you know, back in early 2000s, you know, going into the late 2000s, stuff like that. You know, I was shitting on a lot of stuff, but there's so many fucking good-ass matches, like stuff with Shawn Michaels, Chris Benoit, Kurt Angle. You know, not everybody was having a great match at that, you know, point in time, but there were dudes that knew how to sell.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, not everybody could be Hercules Hernandez. Oh, fucking Dan Lopez's boy now. Because he fucking no-sold a powerbomb and walked out.
That was awesome, by the way. Shout out to Lopez. That was awesome.
And, but hey, it's, you know, just basic shit like selling. I don't know. I don't understand why, you know, some dudes are against that. Like, they'll do some like awesome ass flips and, you know, some awesome sequences, but nobody wants to fucking sell it. Like, they're automatically getting right back up and taking the next, incredible, spot, you know, coming out of these dudes. And, it means nothing and nobody gets caught up in it. And, you know, they're waiting for that 3 hours to end.
All right, so let's take this home with Virgil and wrap this bitch up.
So the you know, pretty much after that $1 million title run, the dude's stocks just plummet. Even to the point where there was a running gag in WWF magazine at the time, because I remember because I had the subscription. And, you know, Virgil was just like, you know, once the whole $1 million man thing was done, you know, he was just basically the dude who was getting fed to, your Adam Bombs, your Lex Lugers, you know, whatever, Shawn Michaels, whatever have you.
Yeah, that happened to everybody, man. Everybody.
Yeah, it happened to everybody. But this happened like real quick because that was a fucking hot run. People were into Virgil, and it's, for me, it was just kind of strange that they just kind of, you know, pulled the rug under this guy, but, you know, it is what it is. You know, he had limited speaking skills. But I will say this. When he was feuding with the Million Dollar Man, one of the things that I thought was totally fucking awesome was when he won the belt, he would do these promos, you know, telling off the Million Dollar Man, saying like, hey, you know, I'm going to let everybody, when I come down the aisle, they're going to get to touch that belt of yours. And they're going to put their hands and their fingerprints all over your former belt. That was like, you know, as far as Virgil promos go, I remember those. But, you know, he just didn't really have too much chemistry with a lot of guys. You know, as I mentioned, some dudes just didn't know how to work with him. And they just kind of gave away that this guy isn't a good wrestler. Which, you know, as far as this sport is concerned, there's a lot of dudes that are not legit tough. Or they're, you know, like, for instance, with like the Vader-Paul Orndorff thing. You know, who would have thought, you know, we all know Paul Orndorff is tough. But I think for most people at that point in time, when that story was kind of revealed, you know, people thought, you know, a dude like Vader would beat the shit out of Paul Orndorff. But it was the reverse. And, you know, even the stuff with Sid, him coming at, what was it, fucking Arn Anderson with the squeegee or something like that. Right. You know, it was just kind of, you know, bizarre. But like when you do it on television and for the matches, it just takes away, you know, a dude's thunder, a dude's credibility. But, you know, interestingly enough, I'm surprised I don't even remember this, but maybe because it was a relatively short match. But Virgil got a world heavyweight title shot against Bret Hart. There was one time where he got a, you know, a shot with Randy Savage when he was world heavyweight champion, but wasn't on par with what this was all about. And, you know, again, they're both faces at this time. Bret Hart's the fighting champion. You know, they were shoving this down everybody's throat that he was defending the title everywhere and anywhere, which I thought was kind of strange because, you know, while they're doing this on air, they're bringing up, you know, he beat guys like the Berserker. He beat guys like the Mountie. And he beat guys like Papa Shango. Like, you know, who the fuck are these guys? They're mid-carders. But, you know, of course he beat Flair for the title, which I'm sure that was like some sort of accident. You know, Flair tripped and accidentally, you know, fell into the sharpshooter, you know, an innocent mistake. And the fucking ref calls the, you know, the bell because he's screaming in pain. You know, that's not a submission. But anyway, that's just my thoughts. So, you know, they have this match on Superstars. Both friends, you know, according to the shoot interview, Bret Hart's a really good guy. He's a good friend of Virgil.
Everybody's and, a friend of Virgil. Come on now.
Absolutely. They're great friends. Actually, I'll get into this a little bit. Like, on that shoot interview, there's 3 degrees of guys. Either they're good guys or they're great guys. And the only – there's one, like, very special distinguishing title, and that went to Arsenio Hall. and he was a super cool guy. Nobody else was called super cool on that shoot interview. Everybody else was great or good. Arsenio Hall, super cool guy. But anyway,
I just watched an Arsenio Hall clip for when he had next week's spotlight African American wrestler on the Turnbuckle Throwbacks.
Right? Oh, I was watching that last week.
Dude, I was beside myself. I totally forgot that happened. So I'm sorry.
There ain't no collard greens in the back. But
come, there ain't no hog moss in the back, Arsenio.
Pig knuckles. But anyway. Knuckles.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
But, you know, Bret Hart and Virgil have like this really nice little 5-minute match where Virgil is on the fucking upper hands the entire match. You know, he's getting him into headlocks, crossbodies, you know, monkey flips, all that kind of shit. Like, Bret Hart, the world champion, is letting Virgil, you know, take him pillar to post. It's just kind of strange. And especially at this time where you had a good amount of years where Virgil is just jobbing his ass off to everybody, left and right. Adam Bomb, Shawn Michaels, Sid, I don't know, all those guys. And, you know, Bret Hart is just letting Virgil just have his way with him. And, you know, it just took one move for Virgil to miss his shot at the world title, and he missed the crossbody. Hart capitalizes and he kind of like almost forcefully puts a sharpshooter on him, and Virgil concedes to the referee and loses his world title shot. But they hug, they shake hands because they're close friends. You know, Bret Hart's a very good guy, or a great guy. He's not super cool, but he's a good guy. But I found that, you know, just kind of like a little cherry on top of Virgil's interesting WWE run or WWF run. And I actually forgot to mention, concerning the magazine, there was even a running joke on Virgil in the magazines. I don't know if you were reading the magazines at this point.
Well, yeah, I read everything. I mean, I didn't read the WWF magazine as much as I read, you know, PWI and the Wrestler and Inside Wrestling and stuff like that.
But for a good while, and it was like around this time, which is where I got the WWF fake Virgil cover, like every month they would be poking fun at this guy. I don't remember who it was specifically that was, you know, pushing Virgil's buttons, but they were always talking about how desperate this dude was, like how he's nagging the guys at the magazine to put, you know, his photos inside of the magazine week after week. And they would blatantly, like, I think there was like a, towards the back of the magazine, there was something called like Up Close, and it would just have like a candid photo
I remember that.
Yeah, it had like a, you know, candid photos of guys. Like, I remember there was like British Bulldog with a kid inside of the ring, you know, those kind of stuff. But there was one month they finally did one of Virgil, of him doing a top rope clothesline to Barry Horowitz. And just to rub it in, they wrote, like, you know, somewhere on the page, you know, this was paid for by Virgil. No. That was the fake WWF magazine cover. It said that this, you know, was paid for by Virgil. You know, this was his idea, whatever. But the up close thing, I remember specifically, they wrote down that it was out of complete pity that they put that photo of Virgil in the magazine for the up close portion of the magazine. But that was the sad end of Virgil until he returned with Ted DiBiase Jr. for a brief run in the E. And how did you feel about that? Were you keeping track of that? Or were you even watching?
When he was honored by – when they brought him back for what? I'm sorry?
When they brought him back with Ted DiBiase Jr.
Oh, yeah. No, it was funny to watch. I mean, it wasn't – I was following, yeah. It was cool to see it as an old school wrestling fan. I just, you know, thought nothing of it. But
now, did you watch the match that I sent you of the Virgil, DiBiase Jr., Big Show, and Mark?
Yes.
Feuerstein match.
Yeah, that was pretty comical.
That was hilarious, and some of the shit that they were saying during this match was, it was one of the few times that the King's been funny in a good while. Because was it Virgil? When Virgil finally gets in the ring, you know, Big Show grabs him by his bald head and pulls him out from the floor, brings him into the ring, and just starts chopping the shit out of this dude and throwing him around like a rag doll. And you know, Virgil, I don't know how old this dude is. What is he, like, he's in his 50s at this point?
Who, Virgil? He's 50, yeah. He's 51 now, so.
Okay, so he was probably 50 then, because right, this was relatively recent.
Right, right, right.
So he's tossing around this 50-year-old dude, and I remember, like, week after week, he's wearing these Under Armour shirts, and, you know, just fucking god-awful. And finally, Big Show just rips it off and just does one of his, like, stiff-ass, like, open-palm chops on his chest. And meantime, Virgil's screaming at everything that's happening to him, to the point where, was it, King says something like, there's some strange noises coming out of Virgil. And, of course, Big Show gets the choke slam, and Feuerstein, the star of Royal Pains, never watched that show, probably never will, don't give a shit about the guy, goes old school and hits the Scotty Too Hotty, you know, worm elbow drop and gets the three. And not too much long after that, Virgil gets fired for Maurice, who also got fired. And here we are with Lonely Virgil at Grand Central Station, waiting for his train to come in.
Now, just to rewind a little bit, his WCW stuff with Ernest Miller was pretty funny. He actually,
I don't even remember that. Yeah. I'm like Virgil. Like, Virgil doesn't remember that, so I don't remember it either.
Yeah, his last run in WCW, he was like a manager for Ernest the Cat Miller, who was funny in his own right.
Yeah.
And he wound up getting replaced by some female, but he actually...
This is Mrs. Jones, because he was managing Ernest the Cat Miller as Mr. Jones.
Right, and he used his real name, apparently. But that was funny shit, too. I enjoyed that.
I don't remember any of that.
Yeah, yeah. That was...
Shows that you can share?
That was like 99, 2000, maybe?
It was like at the... Vince, it had to be like towards like the dying days of WCW, because...
Yeah, no. When Vince Russo took over, he was in the West Texas Rednecks as Curly Bill.
As Curly Bill.
And then he started managing Ernest the Cat Miller. I remember that. So...
And he was one of the last members of the NWO. So he can legitimately claim that he is, you know, NWO for life.
Right. And listen, he has been a math teacher. Apparently he taught. Yeah, he taught Asia and at different U.S. military installations as part of the Morale, Welfare, and Recreation Program for soldiers stationed overseas. That's cool. You know,
yeah.
And again, I don't hate him. I just, you know,
thought you don't that, get him.
Nah, I don't get the whole mystique. I mean, I respect his place in the industry. I respect what he did with DiBiase and the stuff with Ernest Miller and the NWO and everything else. But I don't know. I don't put him up there as one of the greatest African-American wrestlers of all time.
He doesn't have to be the greatest. You know, he had one of the reasons why I want to do this show is because, you know, Virgil held, you know, a special place in time for me. You know, I didn't only do black dude, you know, at the time who was, you know, somewhat popular for me was like Junkyard Dog. But that was like, you know, going from watching like a lot of the old videotapes, the Coliseum videos at the rental store. But, you know, for the most part, you really just had, you know, Virgil, you know, there. You know, he had your Coco Bewares too. But, you know, Virgil was just kind of this interesting cat, you know, for me, who, you know, just took shit. And when he finally got his day in the shade, it was a big deal. And it wasn't, you know... It wasn't like a Coco Beware who was just there, you know, as like all these guys are for entertainment, but, you know, Coco Beware was just kind of like a novelty. There wasn't really any big stories going on with him. He wore the fucking MC Hammer pants with Owen Hart. You know, not to say that Coco Beware doesn't deserve to be in a Hall of Fame or anything like that, but, you know, for me, there was something special about Virgil where, you know, a guy, he was like a really... How can I word it? He was like a real underdog. you know, he didn't really have the skills, but he was able to overcome his handicap. If that's, I think that's probably the best word, you know, his handicap for all this, and, you know, make something out of him. And, you know, for me, it's just kind of interesting that the dude was able to have like a long career that he did, whether it was, you know, from WWF to WCW. And, you know, he had a, you know, he spent some time in the AWA as well as Memphis too. And it's just kind of like, he just had a long run, and despite, you know, his circumstances and his lack of ability and skill, was still there. People still talk about him. He's in the WWE 2K14 game.
Yeah, we have him too.
So you got Mikey playing as Virgil all day long.
Yeah, a bunch of ladder matches. Mikey always puts him in specialty matches for some reason.
Yeah, because, you know, Virgil's hardcore, so there you go.
All right.
But, yeah, he's just, you know, he's just one of those kind of dudes where, you know, I'm just curious how this guy was able to get fucking calls, you know, for, you know, working as long as he did, getting in the video game. Who the hell would have thought, like, Virgil would be in a video game?
Well, because he's a nice guy, and he's a humble dude. And
he's a good guy. He's a great guy. Some may even say he's a super cool guy.
And some say he's a scumbag.
Fucking like Eddie getting charged $50 for his photo that he puts up on Facebook as his profile picture.
That's funny shit. All right. So,
but you know, guys like Dan Lopez, you know, need to look up to him. You know, he looks up to Hercules, like he said in that comment. And, you know, to quote Jesse Ventura during the Hercules virtual match, you know, if the chain fits, you know, wear it. And, you know, for Dan Lopez, you know, if the lawnmower mows, you know, mow it.
Anyway. All right. You want to start wrapping this up?
Yeah, let's wrap it up. All right, well, we're like almost like 2 hours into this. We had a 2-hour Virgil show. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
I carried this, Phil. I know my Virgil.
Congratulations. All right, we are.
Hey, you know, I believe every dog has his day, and I believe every Virgil has his day too. So today is Virgil's day.
Right.
So I dedicate this to Virgil and all the Mike Jones fans worldwide.
All right, we are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. We are on the Shining Wizards Network. We have a fantastic lineup. You got to listen to all these shows; they're great. Shout out to Apex Radio. Stick had some problems of uploading his audio, so we actually put it through our network.
Maybe you should put more Virgil on the show. Maybe then it'll work.
Check out the Apex Radio show. It's on our feed. It'll be on the Wizards feed in a little while when I get this up. The Forearms and Funk Spectacular with Wolfman Jack Foley, the Fallen Angels, our boys, the Midnight Jury. Great. That last show was fantastic. I did Nightmare on Elm Street.
You need to check it out.
Yeah, no, it's really good.
Nightmare on Elm Street and their review of Super Tape 1, my favorite Super Tape.
Dude, we didn't do Super Tape, right? Did you bring that to my house? No.
No, I had already sold it by then.
I think we have it, though. I think we have it somewhere. All right, I got to look that up.
Probably just find it on YouTube or, you know, ask them for it.
Yeah, Neckbreaker. 2.5 Wrestlers, Pro Wrestling 101 with Justin Credible, and of course, our boys, our brothers from Other Mothers, the Shining Wizards. Check them out. We are on The Rant. Shout out to all those guys. Shout out to, obviously, The Rant on Tuesdays. You got the Wrestling Call-In Show. You have What Are You Reading? And just a bunch of great things going on over there. We're going live with them on March the 5th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's going to be fantastic. Let's see what else is going on. All right. Ah, yes. World Premier Wrestling going on. They have a big show at, what is that, March? Where's my fucking paper here? March 8th, 2014, obviously. World Premier Wrestling coming to the World Resort Casino in New York City.
We're going to be there live.
Live. 2 to 6 is the pre-show, Holy Grail. Showtime is 7:30. Doors open at 6:45. Fan Fest will have over 60 wrestlers and pro athletes, including legends of the past and superstars of today. Fans will be able to take personal photos and get autographs of their favorite stars. The Resort World Casino will be the official home of World Premier Wrestling, hopefully, and the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast as well. And
we're going to be there.
And host many shows in 2014. Hopefully, you'll have some of those guys on before the show, working on that with their promoter as we speak. and go to WPWWrestling.com if you want tickets. Customer at WPW Wrestling. Follow them on Twitter, WPW_wrestling. Just shout them out. They're on Facebook. They're on Twitter. It's going to be a good time. It's going to be a fantastic time.
It's going to be a humdinger. It's going to be a wingding of a thing.
That's right.
It's going to be a happening.
Shout out to Brody from the Bloke Show. AJ Maggot helped me with some stuff behind the scenes. Good looking out. NXT Cast, thank you so much for your love and support. And Don Tony and Kevin Castle giving us a shout out last week again. That was awesome. Wrestling Soup. There's a bunch of shows. Support your shows. Support. Real quick, my buddy, my tattoo artist, Rich Fye, he's in a New York hardcore punk band called Caught in the Trap. They just put out their new album, Goodbye New York, and they're going to be having their debut, their record release party. I just ordered the CD. Go to DeadCityRecords.com. They're on the same label as Sheer Terror, No Redeeming Social Value, whole bunch of old-school New York hardcore bands. Go check out. Look up Caught in a Trap. They're on Facebook. They're on Twitter. They're on YouTube. Really, really good stuff if you're into punk and New York hardcore. Just a quick, cheap plug. And that's pretty much it. Dave and I will be back next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. Dave, you got to plug anything? Or?
No, not at the moment. I have nothing to plug.
Nothing, huh?
Nothing. You got to take some time. I got to take some me time right now to get in those projects that I will be plugging soon.
All right. Well, if you want to reach us, we're on Facebook, facebook.com/turnbuckle throwbacks. We're on Twitter, tbuckletbacks. And you can email the show, turnbuckle throwbacks1@gmail.com. Or reach us, you know, through the Shining Wizards Network or the Rant Network. We are very active. Shout out to everybody. Shout out to Tank, posting some good stuff this week on the page.
Yeah.
And thank you to all our wonderful, fantastical fans.
And I want to throw this out there. If you're a Virgil fan and you're kind of curious about where this guy's been doing, go to lonelyvirgil.net, which is put together by network friend Sam Roberts. See how lonely Virgil is these days.
Yeah. This is with you, Dave. I think that's going to do it for us, kids.
That's it.
All right. Well, we'll be back next week. We have an awesome show next week.
Do you want to announce what the show's about?
Yeah, we're going to be doing Bad News Brown.
Or Bad News Alan, who you really old school fans.
Alan Gage, yes. All right, guys.
For all you beer belly sharecroppers out there.
That's right. Go to pet store, get your Harlem sewer rats.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to let this play out. For the Mega Powers, I, as always, your gracious host, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Rea, bidding you adieu. And, of course, as always, take care of yourselves, each other, avoid the clap. And if you're in the Northeast, guys, please, 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 please be careful. We'll get like an ass ton of snow tomorrow.
So order your pizza before, what, 1 or 2 o'clock or something like that?
Yeah, I got to get out. I got to go. I gotta, actually got to go to work soon. So.
Oh, God.
Yeah, pretty much.
Got to pay them bills.
That's right.
Because you're right. The common man.
I am the common man. No more Dusty. Go buy shirts. ProWrestlingTees.
That's risky business, buying a t-shirt.
ProWrestlingTees.com/tropicalthrowbacks. Go buy a shirt. Damn it. Good night, kids.
Peace.
By myself.